Det gällde vänsterflygen i det konservativa partiet. Nästan halva regeringen, de adliga, hitanhängarna, de höga och mäktiga, alla de som ogillade thatcherismen.
But to start with, I hated being called a wet. I thought it was highly insulting, which of course it was meant to be. And it was meant to undermine our position. I mean, we talk about loyalty, but I mean, it's not very easy to show great loyalty to a leader who has let it be known that you're wet and that you're all wet. I mean, actually, what the hell were we doing there if we were that wet anyhow?
På 1980 års partikongress kulminerade söndringen inom regeringen. Blötdjuren revolterade öppet. Avgörande för om Margaret Thatcher skulle klara av attacken var det stöd hon skulle få av en av deras egna, inrikesministern och vice partiordföranden William Whitelaw. Han tillhörde i själ och hjärta blötdjuren. Han var storgodsägare och adelsman av den gamla stammen. Men han ansåg att lojaliteten mot partiledaren gick före allt annat.
I am however very fortunate in having a marvelous deputy who's wonderful in all places at all times in all things, Willie Whitelaw.
He abdicated his judgment really and abdicated himself in favor of her, of Mrs. Thatcher, and did just what he was told, and that was very useful from the point of view getting her policies through, but as I say, I think damaging to the country.
Yeah, Gilmore may think that, and for all I know, that may to some extent be right. But what was the result? The result was that the Conservative Party won the election in 1979 and stayed in power for 10 years. Is it supposed that that could have happened if the Tory Party had constantly been quarrelling with its leader throughout that time? The answer is no.
To those waiting with bated breath for that favourite media catchphrase, the U-turn, I have only one thing to say. U-turn if you want to.
Thatcher gav kritikerna klart besked.
The ladies not for turning.
Hon vidhöll sin politik och det ekonomiska läget förvärrades katastrofalt. Konkurserna blev allt fler, inflationen steg till 22% och räntan hade aldrig varit så hög. Nästan 15% av Storbritanniens basindustri försvann. I en rad tidningsartiklar gick blötdjuren ut med öppen kritik av premiärministern.
Once you lose industry, once you lose the ability to manufacture in a certain commodity, it's very hard, if not impossible, to get it back or to win those markets back. And we lost a lot of markets at that time, both home and overseas. And we've paid the penalty of that ever since. And we said so at the time. And we got no response from Margaret because it was not part of the doctrine.
I must tell you that I think that women have very much more experience of taking tough decisions than men. After all, often we're left carrying the can. And I think that they resented that. But I knew that if we were to get through, we had to be tough. And it was second nature to me. They had that biblical weakness, some of them. Not all of them, some of them. Vanity, vanity, all is vanity. They liked to be acclaimed. They liked to preen themselves. And also, let me say this, I think, but they really thought that the grocer's daughter didn't really know how things were done.
Bakom lyckta dörrar på Downing Street försökte Margaret Thatchers rådgivare varna henne för risken att lågkonjunkturen skulle övergå i en permanent depression. De statliga utgifterna skenade iväg och både inflationen och räntorna var höga. Margaret Thatcher ordinerade större doser av den beska medicinen, nedskärningar i budgeten och höjda skatter. I mars 1981 presenterade finansministern Jeffrey Howe en budget med skattehöjningar och minskad statlig upplåning. Att göra det under brinnande lågkonjunktur gick stick i stäv mot alla konventionella ekonomiska teorier. 364 nationalekonomer skrev en starkt kritisk artikel i pressen. Om inte den ekonomiska politiken ändrade kurs skulle det leda till katastrof.
Well, I think the proof of that pudding was in the eating, was it not? Because we made no changes save to sustain our policy in the direction to which we were already committed. And within 12 months from that time, economic recovery had started. Over the next 8 years, as I say, we had the longest and strongest rate of economic growth in our economic history. We got inflation down to less than 3%.
In fact, unemployment went on rising for more than 5 years after the 1981 budget. It went on rising to July, August 1986. In other words, we were in a growth recession from 1981 to 1986. The recovery from the 1981 recession, although it was much the worst, much the deepest since the war, the recovery was far slower than any previous recession. So how the Thatcherites make a triumph out of that, I simply don't understand.
Sommaren 1981 utbröt kravaller i storstäderna. Ju mer de spred sig, desto mer växte oron för följderna av Margaret Thatchers politik. Och det var inte bara politikerna som oroade sig.
I went from Canterbury to London every week, once or twice, and I could see areas of gradually increasing prosperity, like Canterbury, and I could see areas of economic decline and physical decay and social disintegration in all the streets as I came into London with boarded up shops and graffiti and a sense of aimlessness about the back streets behind them. We had already seen one consequence in the rioting. It seemed to me that we accepted the need for wealth creation, and we saw that a cost had to be paid for that, but we thought that the cost was unjustly distributed.
Under hela sommaren 1981 fortsatte oroligheterna i 30 av de mest förslummade innerstadsområdena i städer som London, Bristol, Leeds, Manchester och Liverpool. Liksom ärkebiskopen av Canterbury betraktade mjukisarna i regeringen kravallerna som en kuslig bekräftelse på att de hade rätt i sin oro över den ekonomiska politiken. Men vid ett besök i Liverpool vägrade Margaret Thatcher att se något samband mellan brottslighet och social misär. Hon ansåg att det var 60-talets fria uppfostran som hotade familjelivet.
When I was their age, our own area had its own standards and its own taboos. There was a period, I think in the 60s, when so many of them were broken down. And people forgot that you cannot have freedom unless you have order. You cannot have order unless you obey the law.
I juli det året, när oron var som värst, samlades regeringen för att diskutera budgeten. Margaret Thatcher och hennes ekonomiska rådgivare krävde åter nya nedskärningar. Men regeringen hotade med att göra uppror.
I knew there were people going to jib at cutting public expenditure to keep within the limits. And I'd heard all the rumors, what they were going to say, how they were going to play it. And I said to Dennis, I'm not going to go on unless we can keep the policy going. This is what I came in to do for Britain. And I can't go on unless we can carry that out. So don't be surprised if I come up and say, I've got to resign, I haven't got through.
people were very jittery. And I think we thought that there had to be some easing of public expenditure and some more attention to social policy and educational policy and unemployment policy and so on. And Margaret herself was very uneasy at that time. She hated going to the House of Commons on Tuesday and Thursday afternoons and being attacked on unemployment in the way that she was.
Nu tog till och med några av Margaret Thatchers mest lojala anhängare avstånd från henne. John Knott, en lysande om en ängslig ekonom, sa att nu fick det vara nog. Lordkanslern, Quintin Hailsham, varnade för en gryende fascism. Till och med den hängivne monetaristen John Biffen krävde en ny politik.
My name was mud with some of my colleagues. They always wanted, some of them, an easy way, but I always had enough to get us through. I had said right at the beginning, when I knew the enormity of the task, the running up the down escalator, give me 6 strong men and true, and we'll get through. I don't think I ever had 6 at any one time, but I had enough. With Willie Whitelaw, who'd always back me when he knew and understood that this was in the heart of our policy.
Om det inte hade varit för William Whitelaw hade Margaret Thatcher inte suttit kvar. Efter den bittra striden i juli 1981 beslöt sig Thatcher för att hon fått nog av sina motståndare. När de kom tillbaka från sommaruppehållet var deras saga all. Hennes främste motståndare Jim Pryor uteslöts ur den ekonomiska kärntruppen och ersattes av den knastertorre Norman Tebbit. Ian Gilmore sparkades. Motståndarna hade aldrig enats om någon gemensam linje. Och inte heller hade de begärt avsked.
I think that there is a strong case for saying that it would have been better if a number of us had resigned. On the other hand, what that would have done to the parliamentary party at a time when we had a relatively small majority and when we were deeply unpopular in the country, it's very hard to say. I think it might have brought down the government. Certainly if all those who had strong disagreement with the policy had resigned, it would have brought down the government. And we weren't elected to, as it were, to resign on and bring down the government. So we stuck in there.
På hösten, när Margaret Thatcher hade gjort sig av med blötdjuren, sjönk hennes popularitet till ett nytt bottenrekord. Hon fick den tvivelaktiga äran att kallas den impopuläraste premiärministern sedan opinionsmätningarna införts.
Popularity isn't the thing. They respect you if you have the guts to do what is right and to stick to it. And the essence of a good prime minister is not whether they are popular, but whether they are respected because they did things that was right for Britain and which raised the standard and standing of our country. Those we did. And so, in a way, the benefit came later when we won the 1983 election with a much, much bigger majority. That's the true opinion poll.
I striden mot blötdjuren hade Margaret Thatcher visat sin styrka och demonstrerat sin förmåga att besegra politiska fiender. Snart skulle hon sättas på prov igen, den här gången på den internationella arenan, i en ny, helt oväntad konflikt. Ur vilken hon skulle avgå med segern, mäktigare än någonsin. Ett framträdande drag hos henne var hennes stridslystnad. Det var hennes främsta styrka, men de kommande åren skulle det också visa sig vara hennes största svaghet. April 1982 gav Margaret Thatcher en stor expeditionsstyrka order att avsegla till Falklandsöarna. Bara några Några timmar tidigare hade den brittiska kronkolonin ockuperats av Argentina. Förlusten av Falklandsöarna var en politisk och ekonomisk katastrof som hotade både Thatchers och hennes regerings framtid. Hon var väl medveten om vilket högt spel hon spelade.
I can only tell you that from the day that I heard that they might invade to the night when we heard that the white flags were flying over Port Stanley, I lived at an intensity, at a concentration that I have never experienced before or since.
She saw our failure here as a damning indictment, potentially, of our whole philosophy. This would be the critical, final, irrevocable evidence of the decline of this country. And that was the thing that hit her, I think, hardest between the eyes right from the start.
När argentinarna firade invasionen av Falklandsöarna trodde de knappast att Storbritannien skulle reagera. Regeringen i London hade låtit Argentinas president general Galtieri förstå att Storbritannien förlorat intresset för denna avlägsna rest från kolonialtiden.
Every war in my lifetime need not have happened if the European powers had handled the Hitler threat sensibly in the 30s. That war wouldn't have happened. The Falklands War was an extraordinary thing because we'd been through the situation when we were in power. We knew the Argentinians, if they saw a chance of taking the Falklands, would do it. She didn't make it absolutely clear, as she should have done to Galtieri, that if he went for the Falklands, she would resist.
We were full of anger. There were our people, there were the Queen's Islands, there were our territory, and we thought the days had gone when anyone belonging to United Nations attempted to take someone else's territory by conquest. Those dictators were stupid. They misjudged us.
Dagarna efter invasionen var kritiska för Margaret Thatcher. Utrikesministern Lord Carrington tog på sig skulden för katastrofen och avgick. Carringtons självuppoffrande gest gav Thatcher det andrum hon behövde.
British territory had been invaded by the Argentines. It was a humiliating disaster. And when you go to war, I think somebody you have to go as a united country. And I think that for everybody to start the argument about who was to blame and why doesn't he resign and all that, I think that's all wrong. I think you take the responsibility. I mean, I was the foreign secretary. I took the responsibility, and I think it was absolutely right.
Margaret Thatcher blev inte mindre fientligt inställd till utrikesdepartementet efter Lord Carringtons avgång. Det förvånade henne inte att UD avrådde från militärt ingripande och förordade en förhandlingslösning. Diplomaterna varnade för riskerna med en militär aktion. Margaret Thatcher ansåg att de ville hindra henne från att uppfylla vad hon betraktade som sin plikt mot nationen, att återerövra öarna.
There are always two sorts of people in life. One who look at the difficulties and who are swayed by those. And that was the Foreign Office. The others who look at and weigh up all the difficulties and all the opportunities and the courageous course of action for the larger freedom.
I refused to accept that she was any more patriotic than I was, or the Foreign Office was. But we had to tell the Foreign Secretary, and we had to tell the Prime Minister, what we saw were the consequences of a particular line that she wanted to take. She wanted to take it, but I think, actually, in her heart, she probably wanted to hear what the downside was as well. We had to tell her, but it made us sound, perhaps, in her view, cautious, negative, conciliatory.
Think it's spineless when you put all the difficulties. They wanted us to negotiate. You can't negotiate away an invasion. You can't negotiate away that the freedom of your people has been taken. That has been taken by a cruel dictator. You've got to stand up and you've got to have the spine to do it. Yes, I know I got very ratty sometimes and said, look, when I'm out of politics, I'm going to run a business. It'll be called Rent a Spine.
I Argentina hade den avskydde diktatorn vunnit i popularitet genom invasionen av Falklandsöarna. På UD i London misstänkte diplomaterna att Margaret Thatcher i själva verket hade samma motiv för att återerövra öarna. Det var en räddningsplanka i ett svårt politiskt läge.
We saw with the Argentines, I think, the fact that they were in a very difficult domestic situation induced them to behave very foolishly internationally in the hope of obscuring their domestic difficulties. That's by no means peculiar to military dictatorships. It's a feature of all political life, and a prime minister who has problems at home will sometimes try to recover them by one kind of activity or another abroad.
Well, I've just taken over from Lord Carrington, who was a very fine foreign secretary, a very fine foreign secretary indeed. And of course, my first concern is the affair of the Falkland Islands, and I've already started work on that this evening.
Margaret Thatchers misstro mot utrikesdepartementet blev bara större efter utnämningen av den nya utrikesministern. Hon var politiskt svag och tvingades utnämna en av sina motståndare, Francis Pym, som förespråkade en förhandlingslösning.
There's no doubt that Francis Pym and I did have a different view on many of the things, which was strange in a way. He had been a Secretary of State for Defense. He had been a very gallant officer in World War II. And he also was a very good and skilled parliamentarian. And I would have thought that on this matter, although we might differ on home affairs, we might have been very much together. We were, as it happened, a little bit further apart than I ever thought.
It would be quite true to say that we didn't hit it off, because our philosophy of life, our outlook on life, are different. And we approached it from different points of view. So that was obviously inherently a difficult situation.
Till sin stora förtret fick Margaret Thatcher inte heller något helhjärtat stöd från Amerika.
It's a very difficult situation for the United States because we're friends with both of the countries engaged in this dispute. And we stand ready to do anything we can to help them, and what we hope for and would like to help in doing is have a peaceful resolution of this with no forceful action or no bloodshed.
Till skillnad från Francis Pym tog sig Margaret Thatcher inte tid att lyssna på den amerikanske utrikesministern Alexander Haigs medlingsförslag. Thatcher ansåg att Haig bara var undfallande mot Argentina när han ville förhandla om fred.
I did say to him, look Al, this is where Neville Chamberlain walked. This is where he talked about a peace with honor over a faraway country. So I'm not in the business of appeasement. Appeasement is wrong. It only encourages dictators. Dictators have to be beaten. Appeasement is no part of my psyche.
I don't think Mrs. Thatcher really liked negotiations at all, or the negotiating process. Indeed, at a moment, I think she thought the whole concept was in some way dishonorable, which I found very curious, because in a crisis of this kind, if one can negotiate one's way out of it so that one doesn't have to use the force of arms, it must be to everybody's advantage. Indeed, I thought it was my duty as Foreign Secretary to go to the ultimate limits in trying to find a way of not having to go to war.
Haigs medlingsförsök gav flottstyrkan tid att förbereda sig för det krig som Thatcher ansåg oundvikligt. Men den brittiska utrikesministern vägrade ge upp hoppet och for till Washington den 21 april för att diskutera Alexander Haigs senaste fredsförslag.
I come because of the very serious situation that has developed in the South Atlantic due to the aggression by the Argentine and her unlawful invasion of the Falkland Islands.
Haigs nya förslag att låta argentinska styrkor vara kvar på Falklandsöarna mottogs inte väl av premiärministern när hon fick höra det i London.
Francis came to see me in my study and showed me what he'd brought back, which was a deterioration on the third proposals that Al Haig had had, and they were worse from our viewpoint. And he told me that he was minded to recommend the acceptance of these by the War Cabinet. I was really just appalled. I said, but we can't possibly. We shall never hold up our heads again.
If you're searching for a peace formula, and a lot of colleagues in this country, people of this country are involved in it, I see nothing wrong in putting on the table what Al Haig had worked out, and that's what I did.
När krigskabinettet samlades på Downing Street försökte Francis Pym förmå sina kollegor att acceptera förslaget som premiärministern betraktade som ett svek.
I got into number 10 about 5 to 6 and the first person I saw was Francis Pym and he said to me I got the final Hague proposals I'm going to recommend that they be accepted, and I hope I'll have your support.
The meeting was about to begin. We all assembled in the anteroom to the cabinet room, and Francis said he was still going to prepare to recommend acceptance. And I got Willie Whitelaw and said, come, we must have a talk, and told him there's no way in which I could accept them.
När Francis Pym la fram fredsplanen för sina kollegor gick de på Margaret Thatchers linje och avslog mycket bestämt alla förslag till en förhandlingslösning.
They were quite clear that their price was too high and this was going too far and we couldn't possibly go down that road. So there was no question of any problem with the war cabinet. They were all very much of a mind and I think afterwards I recognized that they were, you know, quite right in taking that view.
I think that was the worst moment of confrontation, if you like. But I think from that time on, she felt that the Foreign Office had got him and that the Foreign Office were basically in the business of selling out.
A great crisis had passed. I'd had a day of such anxiety looking at all of those proposals, and had we accepted that last one, to me it would have dishonored Britain, and that I could not have lived with. I tried to warn Dennis earlier in the day, the great matters which we had to decide, and said that if it didn't go the way I wanted, I would have to resign.
När Argentina avvisade Haigs slutliga förslag var den väpnade konflikten oundviklig. Margaret Thatcher hade segrat över utrikesdepartementet och Francis Pym. Hon stoppade inte fredsdiskussionerna i FN, men nu var det inte längre tal om några kompromisser. De brittiska styrkorna återtog Sydgeorgien som ett första steg i kriget. För Margaret Thatcher gällde det att segra eller försvinna.
Gentlemen, the Secretary of State for Defense has just come over to give me some very good news, and I think you'd like to have it at once.
The message we've got is that British troops landed on South Georgia this afternoon.
That after 4 p.m. Need to ensure that she didn't go down having lost the fundamental battle which was nearest to all to her political beliefs, her political faith, and what she saw as her role as Prime Minister, would have, I think, finished her off personally. She'd never have gone on in the same way that she did.
Be pleased to inform Her Majesty that the White Ensign flies alongside the Union Jack
in South Georgia. God save the Queen.
What happens next? What is the note?
Thank you very much.
What's your reaction?
Just rejoice at that news and congratulate our forces and the Marines.
Are we going to declare war on the Mr. Thatcher?
Hon anklagades för att jubla över kriget. Men vad som i fredstid var hennes svaga sidor var en tillgång under kriget.
She's inclined to make up her mind and then not listen to the other side at all. Now, as far as the Falklands campaign was concerned, this didn't arise. Of course, there were rarely two sides to the question. One wanted a decision, and she gave it. And from the military man's point of view, she was an ideal prime minister for an operation.
Militärens inställning bekräftades av hennes beslutsamhet när det gällde att sänka den argentinska kryssaren general Belgrano. En söndag när Thatcher befann sig på sitt landställe Checkers begärde marinen klartecken att få torpedera fartyget. Efter att ha konsulterat krigskabinettet kom svaret omgående. Sänk Belgrano. Attacken mot kryssaren var den mest kontroversiella händelsen under hela kriget. Då fartyget sänktes var det på väg bort från de brittiska styrkorna. Händelsen skulle följa henne i månader och år.
I think when people look back on that, they'll see that the loss of life was unnecessary and a settlement could have been reached. But she didn't want a settlement, and she didn't torpedo the Belgrano. She torpedoed the prospects of a peaceful settlement in the Falklands.
Ships do change direction. That one had zigzagged quite a bit. But you cannot ignore the intelligence. You have their big cruisers and... You expected an aircraft carrier soon to be within range of your fleet. No, I think this criticism comes from people who criticize, but have never had to make these decisions. And had we not, and we lost, either Invincible or Hermes or both, we should have been culpable. Very heavily culpable.
Under Falklandskriget var Margaret Thatcher i sitt esse. Krigets svartvita verklighet, vän eller fiende, liv eller död, seger eller nederlag stämde helt överens med hennes egen övertygelse om det rättfärdiga i saken och om att hennes motståndare misstagit sig.
Every fiber of one's being was concerned with what was happening. And of course we did have quite a lot of bad news. And it leaves a permanent mark upon you. But you have to take these risks if the larger issues, like freedom and law, are ones which steadily gain the world over.
För Margaret Thatcher, med sin förkärlek för att dra paralleller med Churchill, var Falklandskriget hennes största stund. En vändpunkt när Storbritannien än en gång kunde gå med högburet huvud. Men det fanns de som ansåg att triumfropen skallade allt för högt och att försoningstanken blivit bortglömd.
In our prayers, we shall quite rightly remember those who are bereaved in our own country and the relations of the young Argentinian soldiers who were killed.
I was dismayed that a jingoistic spirit should take over to such an extent that for years the parents of the Argentine dead were not even allowed to visit the graves of their loved ones. And that seemed to be a kind of symbol of the failure to build creatively upon the sorrows which we both shared.
Inte alla ansåg Falklandskriget vara en vändpunkt för nationen, så blev det ändå en vändpunkt för Margaret Thatcher. Från att ha varit den mest impopulära premiärministern sedan opinionsmätningarna införts, blev hon ett unikt fenomen i brittisk politik. Hon var oerhört självsäker och dominerande. 1983, när ekonomin började repa sig, utlyste Margaret Thatcher val.
Hennes motståndare ansåg att hon var alltför ivrig att dra politiska växlar på Falklandskriget.
It was a risk she took. She should never have had to take it, put herself into a position where she had to take it. But it did come off. And of course she milked it for all it was worth in domestic politics. She kept talking about the Falklands factor, which means I'm always right.
Valsegern ansågs allmänt bero på Falklandsfaktorn. Margaret Thatcher vann med 144 mandats övervikt. Labour var splittrat och de nya socialdemokraterna misslyckades. En del av hennes anhängare såg tecken på gryende presidentfasoner.
As she grew in stature, and as the media, of course, personalized politics to a very considerable extent in her, and it was everything was Margaret Thatcher doing this, Margaret Thatcher doing that. It wasn't the government, and that was how it was presented. And of course, she was extremely successful, and she was the leader, and she was a very strong leader. But the result was, I think, she came almost to believe the media presentation and to act in a quasi-presidential way.
Thatchers person gav upphov till åtskilliga spekulationer. Det påstods att hon levde på kaffe och vitamintabletter. Det ryktades till och med att hon kopplade av i ett elbadkar. Sanningen var trivialare. Juridisk skolning, vetenskaplig blick för detaljer och en outtömlig energi. Marxisterna går upp i gryningen för att arbeta för vad de tror på, sa hon en gång. Vi får gå upp ännu tidigare.
She had an ability to absorb detail until late in the night, and a most astonishing memory. That, in many ways, was the most striking characteristic of all, this phenomenal recall of detail, of things she had read. It was interesting to see how she did it. She used to wade through these huge documents, underlining as she went, and one got to know the signs. A straight underlining just meant I'm committing that to memory. A squiggly line meant this is rubbish. A double underlining meant I agree. And triple underlining meant bullseye.
Hon hade inget tålamod med dem som inte hade samma arbetsdisciplin som hon.
She could be merciless, and I've seen ministers reduced to not tears, but to a state of considerable distress when they realized that she knew more about their paper than the minister himself, and that he had not brought a case together properly.
But as she grew larger and bolder and more powerful, the way in which she treated some male colleagues was unacceptable. Particularly, for example, bullying constantly of Geoffrey Howe. And of course, that sort of attitude, which courteous men do not respond to in like kind, led to the emergence of another harshness among less courteous colleagues. They too followed their leader in some of the less attractive facets of her personality.
I think sometimes the Prime Minister should be intimidating. There's not much point in being a weak, floppy thing in the chair, is there? But I spent hours getting the facts. I spent hours deploying them. It was known it was my whole approach. I was fascinated by statistics and having had the training in science, first find the facts and then deduce your conclusion. Yes, I would deploy them. Yes, I would argue. I hope formidably. There's nothing wrong in that. What they may be complaining about was that I won the argument sometimes.
Kort efter valet ställdes Margaret Thatcher inför en ny prövning som krävde lika mycket av henne som Falklandskriget hade gjort. 1974 hade gruvarbetarna röstat bort Edward Heath konservativa regering som Margaret Thatcher själv suttit i. Den förödmjukelsen hade partiet varken glömt eller förlåtit.
If we remain united, not only will we never be defeated, but in the process, we'll roll back the years of Thatcherism and turn
När Arthur Skagill 1982 blev ordförande i Gruvarbetarförbundet kunde man räkna med att nedläggningen av gruvorna skulle utlösa strejk. Men enligt Margaret Thatcher hade han ett annat och farligare mål i sikte.
Mr. Skagill was a real militant trade unionist. The militants weren't content to use strikes merely to further their own people and the standard of living of their own people. They wanted to use them to bring down a government. They were quite open about it. If they could not get what they wanted by democracy, they would take the fight to the streets.
Arthur Skagill and the miners were trying to defend the one raw material we have which will last us for another 1,000 years, and to present Arthur Skagill, who stood up against her, that was the objection, he stood up against her in support of his members, to present him as a revolutionary, whatever his political opinions may be, was absurd. And when that's looked back on, people will see it had nothing to do with economics. It was an attempt to destroy the strongest union in order to gain a command over all the other unions.
När det statsägda kolgruveföretaget National Coal Board tillkännagav nedläggningen av en gruva den 1 mars 1984 tog Arthur Skagill ut gruvarbetarna i strejk utan omröstning bland medlemmarna.